This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow.
G'day and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name's Adam and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is, and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks very much, mate. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major problem of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Hi there, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who's going to share his experience with alcoholism with us. So let's meet our guest. Would you please like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Mike. I'm a recovered alcoholic and a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming in. Where are you from, mate? Where did you grow up?
That's quite a broad question. I was born in Scotland, lived in England for a little while, came out to Wellington in New Zealand for a couple of years. When I was 10 years old, went back to England for 2 or 3 years, then came back out to Christchurch. So grew up in a lot of different places, but mainly Christchurch.
And what was your childhood like?
Fine. nothing out of the ordinary. I certainly know of fellow alcoholics who had difficult childhoods in various ways, but I really, my childhood, apart from all the travelling and the changing of friends, everything else was fine. My household environment was fine. Yeah, there was nothing. What do they call it? Nothing goofy going on. It was just a normal sort of a childhood, as far as I could tell.
So you didn't have any dark, deeply dysfunctional background?
No.
Wow.
No.
Okay. How long have you been sober, mate?
Just 39 years, about a week ago.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I wish it was down to me, but it's not. It's down to this program.
Okay. So would you be able to tell us a little bit about how your drinking started and how it progressed?
Yeah, I've had a good chance to reflect on that over the years. And my first adventure with alcohol was actually in England when I was 10 years old. I attended a family wedding, and my sister and I had unrestricted access to the wedding was held in a small pub in the UK, and we had unrestricted access to this stuff called baby sham, which was very small bottles of sweet wine. And I got stuck into that and really loved the effect. I probably drank about three bottles, something like that, not terribly much. I didn't get legless, I didn't get sick, but I had a lot of fun. I really liked how it made me feel. So that's kind of how I started.
Mm.
Then didn't drink for a year or two after that. Obviously, being a child, I didn't always have access to alcohol. The circumstances didn't crop up again, and I never really gave it much more thought. But when I look back, I think perhaps a switch was thrown at that point. It was my behaviour seemed to change, and what had been a happy childhood up to that point became a bit different. I suddenly started to find it a bit difficult to fit in. My behaviour went off a bit. I got in trouble at school. I seemed to be generally dissatisfied with things. But I, of course, didn't put that down to any causes. It was just I behaved, seemed to behave slightly differently having taken those first drinks.
Mm.
And, you know, it wasn't a sort of an obvious thing, but thinking about it over time, it appears that way. Alcohol had a pretty instantaneous effect. It was great fun when I drank it, and life was less fun when I wasn't drinking after that point.
So as you went through into adolescence and stuff, did you drink socially? Did you drink alone? Did you binge drink?
Well, it depends. There's so many definitions that of different styles of drinking.
Yeah, how did you drink, Mike?
The next time I drank was when I was about 13. I was at a party, and I suppose you would call that social drinking. I didn't get drunk again, but I got that lovely feeling, and it lifted me up a level. The thing I remember most is my dad was a fairly strict kind of a guy, and perhaps I was always a little bit fearful or respectful of him. But when I got in the car, when he picked me up from that party at about 11 o'clock that particular night, I felt like I was on the same level with him. And I remember making some sort of comments about how well the car was running and things, quite conversational stuff that I wouldn't normally say to him. But my mood was elevated because of the drink. I related to the world in a better way.
So the alcohol gave you confidence in
a
sense?
Yeah, very much so.
It bolstered you?
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Okay. So when did you start feeling that it might be a problem for you? Did you ever feel that?
Yeah, definitely. That's hard to pin down to a specific time because I always had excuses and ideas about why it wouldn't be a problem. So my drinking accelerated quite rapidly from when I was 13 until the age of 22 when I was unable to continue. I was too sick to continue. In that period, my behaviour went off as well. And in the material you were reading out before, you talked about the phenomenon of craving, which had me almost from the start of my drinking. So I didn't get a spell of what would be called normal social drinking. Like many alcoholics have this. They might go for 20 years drinking in a fairly regular kind of a way, and then problems develop. My problem developed pretty much immediately. And I found Fairly soon I was drinking as much as I could, whenever I could. And that, having started to drink, I couldn't guarantee my behaviour and crazy things started to happen. And eventually I was thrown out of school for something I did when I was drunk.
Mm.
And you would think that might have been a problem, but I couldn't see it. And I remember being before the Board of Governors at that point. They gave me the opportunity to put things right, and for some reason I didn't want to. I was glad to be getting out of school. I wanted to, maybe that meant that I could go and do more drinking, earn some money, go and get a job and drink more. Perhaps that's what was really going on.
Mm.
But I certainly showed no appreciation of the opportunity they gave me to perhaps stay in school. I was happy to be expelled.
Thanks, Mike. Just picking up on, you said that you were 22 and you got too sick to continue. Is that when you tried to stop drinking alcohol, or can you describe the sickness?
There were several efforts to stop drinking. Not always with the realisation that alcoholism was a problem, but that drinking didn't seem to have good results. And they started probably from when I was about 18, 19. I was referred to a doctor who sent me to the Bridge Program, an alcohol treatment program. I didn't like what they had to say, so I didn't stay for that. I had trouble with the police, and perhaps one of the best examples of, or one of the examples of the phenomenon of craving was an experience I had with a counsellor in Dunedin that I was referred to through the courts. And she gave me some options. I began to think my drinking might be a problem. My behaviour certainly was a problem. And she gave me a list of options. Most of them involved treatment and not drinking, but there was one that involved drinking, and that's the one I picked, of course. She's controlled drinking. So we actually set up a plan where I would try and regulate my drinking to a sensible amount.
Okay.
And this was a very worthwhile experiment, because this is something that no real alcoholic can do. It's futile, but I had to sort of prove that to myself. We agreed I could drink one jug on the way home from work. And that night, for some reason, I didn't go to the pub. But I was serious about this this counsellor. I wasn't playing games like some people do when they're trying to wriggle off the hook of something. I was really trying to actually accomplish something with this exercise.
Mm.
The next day on the way home from work, I called in the pub to have my permitted one jug. And then, having finished that, I had a thought. I didn't come in yesterday, so I've got one jug owing from there. So I had yesterday's jug. And then I thought, well, I won't be in tomorrow, so I'll have that one as well. And that was my effort at controlled drinking. The first attempt was just blown. A couple of weak kind of excuses. I didn't come in yesterday, I won't come in tomorrow. I was back with that counsellor the next day. Controlled drinking did not work.
So you tried it the one day?
And well, it was lasted an abject
fail.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah, I couldn't get past one day.
I see.
And that, I think that was the characteristic of my drinking. I never had any control.
So how did you stop? And how old were you when you stopped?
I was 22 when I stopped. I had malnutrition. I couldn't think. I was not functioning mentally. I'd learnt a few things along the way with exposure to a couple of AA members and counsellors and some time in the treatment centre, and a lot of things I'd been warned about had all begun to happen. I'd lost my job. I had no friends left. I had no money. All my possessions were in two plastic rubbish bags. I'd been sleeping in parks and things like that. The fundamental thing was I just didn't seem to be able to make a go of life. Didn't matter what I tried and what advice I got. I had many people try to help me. We tried many different things, anything from shifting towns to changing girlfriends to changing jobs to name it. We tried to change. I tried to change every external circumstance, and nothing made any difference.
So your life really wasn't going well, and it wasn't, from your point of view, from a lack of effort or a lack of support from others.
No, there was no lack of support from others.
Mm.
And eventually people got fed up with me, and I became something of a social pariah. I often say that in those days the only invitations I ever got to anything were invitations to leave.
So how did you stop? You said that you'd been exposed to a little bit of some AA people.
Yep. And in the end, having tried everything else, I felt like I had nothing to lose. I'll call AA. And I was in a pretty desperate state, but still inclined to minimise the problem. I remember almost the exact words when I called the AA number. I said, "My name is Mike, and I think I might have a drinking problem."
Okay. Okay. So you made that admission.
Yeah, I might. It's not exactly an admission. I might have a drinking problem. I still wasn't sure. What I really wanted was for the misery to stop.
You wanted the misery to stop.
And I thought that was my last hope. And I didn't really think that would work. From that call, I was what we in AA call 12-stepped. I got to spend an afternoon with a recovered alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a really good talk. And not only did I begin to figure out what was wrong with me by talking one-on-one and going through some of the questions about what happens when I drink and what happens when I try to stop, but I was also able to find out a little bit about AA and how it worked, what the meetings are, what the program is. And by the time I got to my first AA meeting, which was that Sunday night, I had a rough idea what was going on, and I had one friend, the guy that I'd been with all afternoon, who took me there. So I don't know if I would have got there on my own. You know, I was frightened of my own shadow at that point, and turning up to a room full of people that I didn't know might have been tough, but having that friend was so worthwhile. I think that probably saved my life.
So when you got in to an AA meeting, how did you find the other members of AA? How did they treat you?
Oh, look, I don't remember a lot, but I have this permanent kind of image in my mind. As I walked through the door, there was an old guy there called Joe who had white hair and a bright yellow bush shirt and a big smile, and he was pleased to see me, and that was a new experience. I hadn't experienced that for a long time, and I got a very warm welcome overall. I didn't say anything. I sat down the back. I didn't speak in a meeting for a long time, but I didn't have to. I already knew that. I could just go and listen. And when I listened, I began to hear some things that rang bells.
Mm.
And I began to get some hope too, because I could see these folks had been like me and they'd found a way out. And I got pretty curious about that over time.
Mm. So you haven't had a drink for a very long time now, just 39 years. Mm. How have you managed to stay sober, Mike? Would you describe the process of your recovery?
Well, we have this saying, and we did have then, you'd hear it a lot, of course, they used to say do 90 meetings in 90 days. And the idea behind it was that it takes a long time to get as sick as I got, and it might take some time to get well. And it would be a good idea to spend that 90 days around AA and give it a good try and see how it works out. And if I didn't like it at the end, they'd refund my misery at the door.
Mm.
But I never claimed on that refund.
Okay, but did you do the 90 meetings in the first 3 months?
87 or something like that.
Right.
But I didn't take it literally, because the one thing I've learnt is the meetings are part of the picture, but they're not enough on their own to get me sober. So I took the whole thing as a metaphor for total immersion in AA.
Mm.
And that meant that I got a sponsor, and I got him to help me with the program.
Okay, and what's a sponsor, Mike?
Well, a sponsor is someone who's taken the steps, had a spiritual experience as a result, and recovered from alcoholism. And there's someone whose style of sobriety I liked, who was willing to help me with the program.
Okay.
Because the program's, it's very, very simple, but in the state I was in, it wasn't that easy to understand. It was much nicer to have someone to work with me and get to know me a bit and help me through it.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the steps.
The steps.
Yeah. Can you tell us anything about the steps?
Oh, I can tell you lots about the steps. You see them on the meeting of every on the wall of every meeting that I've been at. The 12 steps hang there. And I would say now that they are a summary of the AA program, an abbreviated summary. The they're a little bit hard to understand just in that form. There are one or two steps there that might make some obvious sense and one or two that look pretty frightening. But there are two things missing, and that is the why should I take those steps and how do I take those steps?
Mm.
And those answers I found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. In the small part of the book, really, in the first 164 pages, which is less than half of it, there is detailed guidance, explanation, firstly about, say, the first step, which is identifying my problem, which is the why. Identifying the why, that's a critical thing. Why should I do this stuff? That's identifying the nature of the problem that I have. And really how our book works is it invited me to compare my experience to that described in the book. And one of the things would be that loss of control we were talking about before, the phenomenon of craving. Was that my experience? Well, when I look back, it certainly was. Every time I drank, or most times I drank, I lost control. Not always. Perhaps there were some times I could control it, but usually I lost control and something crazy happened.
Yeah.
So that was a difficult thing to overcome. But of course, the simple answer to that is, don't take the first drink. If you don't do that, you won't get drunk and you'll have no problems.
Mm.
But that brought me to the second part of my dilemma, the obsession of the mind or the compulsion. And that's such a subtle thing I've come to learn. It's the idea that seemed to be permanently rooted in my mind that whenever I pick up a drink, I could experience that feeling I had all those years ago in England when I drank baby sham.
That euphoria when you were 10 years old.
That lovely feeling that a couple of drinks gave me. And that was nearly always the objective when I drank, was to have that feeling. Mm. But then that phenomenon of craving kicked in, which has been described as an allergy of the body or an abnormal reaction to alcohol, and I'd lose control. So it was trying to protect myself against that subtle obsession, the idea that one day I could go back and experience it the way it used to be. And I never could. And I guess that the trap here, as it's described in the book, is a complete failure of the kind of defence that stops one putting one's hand on a hot stove. Every time I had the lovely thought of a drink, the thoughts of the consequences that always came, they never came. Those thoughts never came. The thoughts that should have saved me didn't come, so I'd end up drinking. Sometimes I would swear off in the morning because of horrible experience the night before, and say to myself, I'm not drinking today, and if you put a lie detector on me, that would be the absolute truth. Yet 6 o'clock that night, I'd be on my third drink when I'd remember, I wasn't going to drink today.
So let's just steer you back to how you managed to stay sober.
Well, you're right on it there. The idea was that I had to find some defence against that lack of mental defence, the strange mental blank spot that got me into trouble. And the meeting said that was to do with a higher power that we would find through the steps. And so I got quite serious about that, and that's how I got sober. I didn't have any belief or knowledge or experience with such a higher power. It was beyond me, but I wasn't willing to write it off because it was the last. This was the last cab on the rank. There were no other options left for me.
Mm.
So I focused entirely on finding this higher power through working the steps. I didn't think it would work, so I'm just going to meetings, I'm talking to my sponsor daily, I'm working on the steps as it becomes apparent to me, spending a lot of time. The steps are not done in the meetings, they're done away from the meetings, either on my own or with a sponsor. 3 months went by, my sponsor rang me and said, Michael, did you know you'd been sober for 3 months? And I didn't know.
Mm.
I hadn't taken a note of the date. No one was more surprised than me. And I discovered a sudden realization that I'd gone all that time without really wanting a drink.
Amazing.
And I've kind of kept it up. I've kept up the involvement in the meetings. I've particularly living that way of life that I learnt in the steps. And it's never occurred to me to drink since, in spite of life throwing up its tragedies and challenges as it will to everybody. The thought of a drink has never come to mind since.
That's fabulous, and you actually look like quite a happy, well-rounded individual, Mike.
I have a lot of fun these days. I've had a fantastic career in business. I've had a job that jobs that I love doing. I've got my own business these days. I spend time sailing. I've sailed a boat up to Thailand and travelled around Southeast Asia. I've just come back from a motorbiking holiday on the North Island. Just the
fabulous.
the whole world is wide open. Total freedom from alcohol. Yeah.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us, mate.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
It's been a pleasure having you. For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are 66 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show is every Monday at 6 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz. That brings us to the end of the show. Thanks so much for listening. And remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We'll close the show now with the Serenity Prayer, as we do at every AA meeting.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.
You better let somebody love you. For it's too late.